For these sections, we are going to move on to rotamers, rotational conformers. So we have a little bit of terminology that I need to introduce to you first before we get into our main subject. First, I know that we've probably used this out loud, but I don't know if I wrote this down yet. What is an isomer? What are isomers? Yes. Right. Molecules with the same formula, but different structures. We're going to see a few types of isomers. There's a few major ones, though. If you look at these two molecules, you would determine that they both have the same chemical formula. It's just that I've changed the position of a single and a double bond. So these are functional isomers, which have different functional groups. If I had just an alcohol, but I had it at the one position versus the two position, then these are called structural isomers. They're at different positions. And then there's the trickier class of compounds, molecules that have the same chemical formula, and everything is pretty much hooked up in the same positions. But you have a different three-dimensional connectivity. So we have a whole chapter to talk about situations like this. Again, same substituents on that one main central carbon. So we have a methyl, an ethyl, a deuterium, and an alcohol. But those are not the same molecule. You would not be able to take one molecule and stack it on top of the other and have it match up, as they differ in 3D space. So these are stereoisomers. So they have different 3D connectivity. Then we have what we're investigating today, not different molecules, but different forms of the same molecule. So there's this term conformation, which means the specific geometric arrangement of atoms in a molecule. From that, we get this sort of hybrid term, conformers, which is a shorthand meaning molecules that are identical molecules but have different conformations. For example, you could rotate a single bond around part way. Rotating a single bond doesn't change the molecule you've got, but it could change the energy depending on how the different substituents are interacting with each other in that molecule. And so that's what the term conformer refers to. Conformers are identical molecules with different conformations. And potentially different energies. The specific type of conformer we're going to look at today is a what's sometimes referred to as a rotational isomer, or I'm going to use the term rotamer. Rotamers are identical molecules in which a single bond has been rotated. So they're a subset of conformers. Now, to get into what kind of conformers these are, we have to come up with a way of writing these structures down. Because what we're going to be doing is examining some different single bonds and seeing how the different groups that are part of that system are physically located relative to each other. So this kind of structure writing is what's called a Newman projection. And to do our first Newman projection, I'm going to use the molecule ethane, but for the six hydrogens in ethane, I'm going to label them A, B, C, D, E, F. In order to do this, though, we're going to have to formally now get these dash and wedge bond types that you saw me write the structure of methane with in previous lectures. All going to be about visualization today. So, a little bit separately from this, we have the dash wedge convention. So if you write something with that wedge, that thick bond, then that means that it's pointed out towards you. So the simple bonds that I have written, the thin lines, those are to represent that you've got a molecule sitting there in the plane of the paper. So if I was looking down at the projector, it would be like this OH group is pointed back up at me. For where you're sitting, the OH group would then be pointed out of the board towards you. So this means pointed towards the observer. The opposite, if you were to turn, in this case, this example molecule, 180 degrees, and flip it over, so that now the OH group would be pointed away from you, either into the back of the board from where you're sitting, or into this projector from where I'm standing. That's what the dash represents, pointed away from observer. I'm going to leave myself with not enough room, but there's an important point that I should make. Properly written tetrahedral structures will have no more than exactly one wedge and one dash. And it doesn't matter which way they're pointing, in a sense, except that where you have the two plane bonds that come together and form a point, then notice the way I've done this. The wedge always points away from that point. The dash always points away from that point. This is related to tetrahedral symmetry, which we're going to come back to this heavily when we do the stereochemistry chapter. If we look at the way I've written ethane, then, for the left-hand carbon, you can see that I have the two simple bonds pointing in one direction. It's like they make
on the other side, I have the two plane bonds where they make a point that's pointed to the upper right. And notice that the dash and the wedge are also pointed to the upper right. This is again related to what does a tetrahedron look like. If you think that you're going to have difficulty visualizing these kinds of structures, then I highly recommend that you get one of the molecular modeling kits that's available. The bookstore should be carrying one type, which I forget the name of the models. Did anybody happen to buy the model set? Do you have it with you? No, that's okay. I've got versions that I could show you all, and if you took the Chem 1 sequence here, you might have even used those model sets in your previous classes to visualize.
The Math and Science Center has that kit.
Oh, to check out?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So the what used to be called the Tutorial Center?
Yeah.
Okay. The Student Success Center, I think, is what it's called now.
I'm not sure if they actually lend it to you, but they have it.
They have it there where you could use it. Okay. Again, though, if you're going to be in the sciences for a while, if you're going to be doing particularly things with organic molecules, you might want to get these model sets, and I'll throw this out there, that if you do have them, you're allowed to use them on your exams. Now, they won't be useful for every single problem, but they'll be useful for situations like this, where you do have to do visualization. What kind of visualization are we going to do? Well, let me go ahead and label my different hydrogens. Arbitrarily, it doesn't matter which one I'm calling which, but I just want to make sure that we've got the six different hydrogens labeled so we can tell them apart on the diagram that I'm about to make. To do visualization for a Newman projection, it's all about focusing on what's around a particular single bond. So I've written the single bond in plane way to show that bond's in the plane of the paper, to make it more apparent to a reader which bond do I care about. Because there are seven single bonds in this diagram. But I'm going to visualize this one that's lined up for us already. I'm going to look down the bond so I can see, is one hydrogen on one carbon possibly got a substituent on it that's pointed the same way as another carbon? Because what we're just about to talk about is that those two substituents, depending on how big they are, you know, they're only one atom apart, one atom separated from each other. But what if they're really big, huge groups? Well, then they might physically bump into each other, and energetically it might be preferable then if the bond was to rotate, to not have that bumping into each other. That's the whole point of doing this analysis. We're going to be doing what's called conformational analysis, figuring out what's the lowest energy form of a molecule, which any of you in the bio field, you'll eventually hear about that as well, because proteins and DNA, they fold to minimize energy as well. So that's a more complicated case of conformation analysis, but same purpose, to look and see how do things bumping into each other affect the shape of the molecule. So if we're going to be analyzing this bond, we have to decide, are we going to look from this side to look at the bond this direction, or are we going to look from this side to look at the bond this direction? And it doesn't matter which we do, but we should do just one for right now to be consistent, just in this example. So do you want to look from the left or from the right?
Right.
A lot of people that don't care so much. So since right now we're operating in a language that is written left to right, why don't we visualize from left to right? This is where that eyebrow thing comes in, because am I going to look at the molecule like this, or am I going to follow the molecule like that? And it matters because we want to make sure we're accurately representing the diagram, the relative position of all the atoms. So it matters which way we do it. Just so I don't keep having to try to make myself fall over like that, I will go ahead and put my eyebrow up. And so I'm going to visualize the molecule this direction. I'm going to put something into the molecule that doesn't exist. A disk. And what we're going to do is see, well, which things will be in front of that disk and which things will be partly obscured by this disk. This was created by Newman to try to show what is the relative position of all these different hydrogens or other groups relative to each other. So let's try to translate this into the projection. Here's the way the projection is going to be written. We'll start out with that disk.
And so what we see in front of that disk will write bonds that go all the way through to each of the different atoms, because they're not being blocked by that disk. So what do I see in front of me in this diagram?
ABC.
See, ABC, if I'm looking this way, where is A? Straight up, isn't it? Because that's what this plane bond means. It is tilted towards me a little bit because this is a 109.5 degree angle, roughly. But from this perspective, I can't tell necessarily that it's pointed towards or away from me. All I know is it's pointed straight up. What about B? Okay, so from my position, it's on my left, right? I mean, correct? Because the dash means into the plane of the board. If I'm looking this way, but that dash means the plane of the board, it means it's over here, which is my left. Between A and B, what will be the apparent angle?
109.
Not 109. Not if I'm viewing it this direction.
120.
That's right. Because I have this circle that I'm looking at. And again, any angle this way or that way, I can't tell from this perspective. I'm not visualizing that way. All I can see is that I've got something pointed up, something pointed to the left, and we're going to come to C here that's pointed out to the right. Well, there's one of those geometrical coincidences. When you look at the bottom of a tetrahedron like that, imagine it wasn't a tetrahedron. Imagine it really is like, I mean, we're going to call this tetrahedral in shape, so don't get confused. But if I took this off and put a lone pair, what shape would I call it?
Trigonal.
Trigonal means 120 degrees, which means when you look at that pyramid from its bottom, you're going to see 120 degree angles there, not 109.5. So what I'm going to see in the front of the molecule is this.
The hydrogen pointed straight up, HA. I'm going to see HB down and to the left. It's going to be at 120 degrees on this diagram, at least. And then C will be equivalently pointed 120 degrees the other direction on this diagram. That's for the front carbon. I'm writing this phrase virtual disk, because it's not that the molecule really has some disk in the middle of it. It's the way that we can tell front and back apart. How? Because the things in back, I'm not going to connect the lines all the way to the center, because that disk effectively blocks it. So, hydrogen F, which way is that pointing?
Down.
Straight down, isn't it? I mean, ignore the fact that it's really
leaning off to the right here, because if I'm looking like this on this board, can I tell if anything is pointing towards or away from me?
No.
Not unless I really look in 3D. My eyes can tell from the side, but if I'm just visualizing this way, then you can't tell. So it doesn't matter that F is really pointed that direction. It's pointed straight down from my perspective because it's in the plane of the paper, because it's written with a plane bond.
So HF will be pointed this direction. Then HD,
to my left or right?
Right?
It's to the right because it's a wedge. Wedge means out of the paper. I'm looking along the paper. The wedge being out this way is my right.
So there's HD. And then we have HE in back. This is a simple Newman projection. Between every one of these, we have a 60 degree angle. Because we have them nice and evenly spaced, if we were to squish this molecule flat now, you know, from front to back, there is no direct overlap between one group and another. There, even if these were large groups, they'd still be kind of in between each other. And so we call this the staggered conformation.
Well, let's do an exercise.
And I realize these are split pages here, but the diagram I just drew, the Newman diagram, is for the line structure I drew up above.
What if, on this original line structure, I rotated the back carbon 60 degrees? Let's say that I took the HD that is pointed out towards you at the moment and rotated it so that it's pointed straight up. What's that? But it'll overlap now, that's right. We'll come up with a term for that. But what's going to happen to HE? It will line up with HB, that's correct, because if you take HD, which is pointed out this way, and I turn it 60 degrees, so now it's pointed straight up and down, that means that the group that was pointed up at a 60 degree this way will turn 60 degrees and now be pointed down and in the back of the page. But that means that the group that was pointed straight down will also rotate, and it'll rotate 60 degrees this way, so now it'll be pointed down, but out of the page. So in other words, if I rotate by 60 degrees,
and let me write them side by side so we can see this in comparison. And let me put my labels in so we're clear what's what. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J. And I'll show it this way. So I've got an arrow kind of wrapping around that bond to show that I'm going to be rotating. Since arrows mean something specific, I've got this, which I've seen used before, this little loop arrow that doesn't mean chemical reaction. It just means you're rewriting the molecule.
I'm rotating at 60 degrees, and the front carbon, because we're visualizing that direction, I'm going to leave alone. The back carbon will now look like this. If you didn't follow how these different hydrogens end up in the different places, this is why you need models. Because I could explain it again, but for some of you, until you do it yourself and see it yourself, it isn't going to click, no matter how many times I say it. Let's take the same fixed position for our viewpoint. And let's see what kind of Newman projection we would get from that. Well, the front's going to stay the same because I didn't rotate it. And I'm observing from the same place. And again, the front, because it's in front of this virtual disk that we insert there, we write the bonds all the way through. But in the back, what are we going to get now? Well, if you look from front to back, HA and HD, they're both pointed the same way. They're both pointed straight up, so they're going to line up with each other now. If you don't write them right on top of each other, because that's hard to interpret. So you're going to write the group in back to one side just slightly, or the other. Whichever side you write it to, you should do it the same for all three positions. So because they exactly coincide, I'm going to just decide to write it off a little bit to the right. Now, I say a little bit because if I wrote it in between A and C, then it looks like I'm trying to write something that's staggered. So I do write it pretty darn close. And by having that really close overlap, then you're trying to show, no, really, they're overlapped. But again, you're spreading it out just to take it easy on the reader. If you observe hydrogen C, which hydrogen is going to overlap with it? F, because they're both
wedges. So they're both pointed out towards you. And so because I wrote D a little bit to one side, but specifically the right side, I'm going to do the same thing for my hydrogen F. And then hydrogen E will be similarly written. Notice the key feature is that those bonds, those three that I just wrote, do not go through to the center of the diagram. And that's, again, the purpose of this disk that we're putting in. Can there be a bond angle somewhere in between the two? Could it be something between this staggered conformation that I've shown you or this eclipsed conformation? Where overlap occurs front to back. The answer, yes, you can have angles anywhere in between, but these are the two extremes. One is going to be lowest possible energy for this particular molecule, and the other one's going to be the highest possible energy in terms of what happens just as you rotate these things around. But that is the point that you're going to rotate these around. And that's where this rotational energy diagram, this Rotermer energy diagram, is going to come from. Now, I've thrown a lot of terms at you so far today, so any question on the terminology, or then any questions on what I wrote, how I wrote it, and how I did the projection?
So from the second diagram, mm-hmm. rotating it to the right or 60 degrees to the right?
I'm rotating this 60 degrees from the perspective of the viewpoint counterclockwise. I'm rotating it 60 degrees into the plane of the paper. So hydrogen D was pointed out, and now I'm making it up.
To the left.
To the left. That's right. Correct. Other questions? Then a little definition. If we had, this is going to be tricky to draw. Imagine that I had a bond that was pointed straight up on the front carbon, but was pointed at a 60 degree angle relative to that same axis in the back position. There's a term for that kind of angle, which is called a dihedral angle, which is an angle created by two different planes. And I'm not a geometry teacher, so I might botch drawing this in a way that makes sense, but I will attempt to do so. Because here's one plane that contains that front hydrogen. And here's another plane that contains that back hydrogen. So the way that what I'm really trying to say is the two bonds to the two different hydrogens, they're not on the same carbon. So I can't just say what's the bond angle there, because they're not located on the same position. But if I use the term dihedral angle, built into that is the idea, okay, they're not on the same carbon, they're separated by one. And that's the angle that we're looking at. So one more time, if you look at the Newman projections, and you see that I wrote there the 60 degrees. Well, there isn't really a 60 degree bond angle here, because you've got a bond separating the two carbons. So again, this refers to what does it look like? What's the relative position of those two things, but separated? That's what dihedral angle. So I might have made this complicated the way I worded it, but it's from this thing that might have intuitively understood already from the diagram. Why do I quote this thing called dihedral angle? Because in these rotational energy diagrams, we start with two of the atoms right on top of each other. And we see what happens as we rotate the atom 360 degrees around. And so I'll define this staggered conformation that we've got to be 0 degrees. If I then write out a diagram, it's going to look like a sine wave. We only care about the 60-degree marks because those are when the extremes, the staggered or eclipsed conformations, occur. Energy here, because it's an energy diagram. 0 is going to be high, 60 low. 120 the same as 0. 180 the same as 60. And it just goes back and forth and back and forth. And, darn, I looked the numbers up earlier, but already forgot them. Does anyone have their text so I could cheat and look up and see what that energy difference is? Some reason I'm thinking it's 2.9 kilojoules per mole. But if I'm going to quote the value, I want to be right at that. This is on page 98 of your text. And it's 2.9 kilocals. I prefer joules, so this is 12 kilojoules per mole difference. Which means you cool this molecule down enough and it won't rotate anymore. This is what is called a rotational energy barrier. That in this case, the staggered conformations are each the same energy lower than each of the eclipsed conformations. Things fall down, not up. So when possible, the molecules will try to be in this staggered conformation. If there's enough energy around due to temperature, then that temperature provides the energy necessary to get over this hump, because you're going to be clashing. You're going to be rising in energy trying to get these things lined up with each other. Then if you pass that boundary, it will continue to rotate till the next staggered position. So at room temperature, there's usually enough energy for the rotation of a single bond to occur rapidly. However, at low enough temperature, this rotational energy barrier will prevent rotation from occurring. Now, if I get time, I'm going to come back and explain why is it that the staggered conformation is lower in energy than the eclipse conformation. How many of you read this section? Okay, we're getting a little bit better with the reading. If you know the answer, then don't say it, because I want to see what logically you all come up with just looking at this. So what do you think would be the explanation why the staggered is lower? And again, if you already know the reason, and you know, then just for the moment, stay silent. Some logical guesses, some educated guesses is what I'm looking for. Because electrons repel each other. And so we have this term that this is the one I want to get more into for today. Steric hindrance. Now, steric refers to shape, size, or volume. The idea that there is space involved. Steric hindrance is this situation. If you had two methyl groups next to each other, one thing that is deceptive from the way that we write structures is we draw these thin little lines connecting atoms to each other. But it totally ignores the fact, in these diagrams, that there's really a much larger cloud of electron density that really extends further away from the atoms that we indicate with these diagrams. Well, where the electron clouds bump into each other, that's negative charge bumping into negative charge, which is not favorable. So steric hindrance is this. It is an energy strain caused by two clouds of electrons trying to occupy the same physical space. It won't happen, so the structure of the molecule has to distort. And it's that distortion that's called steric hindrance. When two clouds of electrons attempt to occupy the same space, they will repel. And or the molecular structure will distort. And that is steric hindrance. My first organic instructor was Italian, and so he loved to talk about this as being the spaghetti effect. You get two clumps of spaghetti too close to each other, and you just can't squish them. And if you did, you can squish them together, but something has to give. It has to distort. That's steric hindrance. Yes, I know. Maybe I shouldn't be talking about this as we get close to lunchtime. But anyways. So steric hindrance is not the answer to why having these hydrogens lined up with each other causes an energetic effect. It is the answer for any other problem like this we do. But could someone give me the one-word answer what really happens in ethane? I heard a one-word answer, but I couldn't quite hear it. That could be multiple things, though, so not specific enough. But you have brought up this idea that we're going to have what's called torsional strain, that having a certain angle between atoms that are separated can have an influence on structure. The one-word answer is hyperconjugation, which is an effect that we're going to see all over the place this quarter. This just happens to be our first introduction. Since it's so important, though, I'm going to save it so that if I run out of time, I'll explain it in lab one day. But don't worry, we will not miss it. It's important. But with the amount of time left, we've got just enough time to run through butane, which is, other than ethane, the classic problem for Rotermer diagrams. On your first exam, you will have to write down pretty much stroke for stroke everything that I'm about to put down on paper. Because what we're going to do is draw the line structures for the unique forms of butane, and we're going to draw the rotamer, the Newman projections for the unique forms of butane, and then show how those forms are related energetically on an energy diagram. So, butane has the central carbon-carbon bond, and then one methyl group on either side. At least if we're worried about the central bond in butane, which is what we are going to worry about. So let's draw four different line structures then, shall we? In each case, I'm going to keep a methyl group in the same place, on the front position, because as we already have done, I'm going to visualize all these from the left-hand side. If I wanted to rotate the back carbon, and it doesn't matter which way I do it, but let's say I choose to rotate it so that it's now 60 degrees out towards us compared to what it used to be, then what will that mean for the hydrogens on the back carbon? Where will they be located? So the front hydrogen on the back part, if I rotate the top methyl group, which is pointed up at the moment, but turned 60 degrees towards you, then that means that this group that was pointed down but towards you will rotate 60 degrees as well. Well, 60 degrees will bring it where?
Straight down.
Back into the plane of the paper. The back hydrogen, it was pointed 60 degrees and away from you. If I turn it 60 degrees, it's still pointed away from you, but now it's pointed up. Notice that everything that I've drawn so far, every single carbon has no more than one wedge, one dash, and two plane lines, and the two plane lines are always in opposition to the direction of the wedge and dash. What if I turn it another 60 degrees? So again, keeping the front position the same. But now I'm rotating that methyl group another 60 degrees, so it's pointed like the front hydrogen. It's pointed down and towards you. What is that going to mean for the hydrogens? Well, one hydrogen will move in back, so the hydrogen that was in the plane of the paper is going to move 60 degrees now, so it's going to go into the back of the board. And then the last hydrogen, the one that was in back, but pointed up, but away from you, it's going to rotate 60 degrees and come straight up and down. The last case is the other case that's easier to draw. Because if the two methyl groups are in the plane of the paper, then that means all the hydrogens aren't. Now let's make Newman projections for each of these. The front is always the same, so I'll draw the fronts to these right away. We have the methyl group up top every single time because that's the way I've set my viewpoint. We have hydrogens on the left and the right on that front carbon. It is the back carbon that rotates, and so let's see how it changes. The first is an eclipsed conformation. The second, staggered. The next, eclipsed again. And the last, staggered again. So one set of terms that we'll associate with these are eclipsed, which I'll abbreviate E everywhere, staggered, S, eclipsed, staggered. Once you get past ethane, any larger group you start substituting on here, in terms of its energetic effect, it's going to be sterics. The methyl group is big and bulky, and so it bumps into whatever is on the front carbon. It might make sense that a methyl group bumping into a hydrogen is not going to have as much steric hindrance as a methyl group bumping into another methyl group. Two methyl groups experience more steric hindrance than methyl and a hydrogen. Because of that, we worry about the relative position of the methyl groups to each other. We call the one where the two are as far away from each other as possible the anti-conformation. Anti meaning opposite. Your text doesn't refer to this, but when it's the same, it's sometimes called the syn conformation. There is no common name that I've seen for the third form that we've got here, but there is one for the staggered conformation, the non-lowest energy staggered conformation. And that is called gauche, which is the word for left in French, and it's related to the old idea in European cultures that left is bad. The word sinister, sinistrous, means left. Why does it mean evil? Because left-handed people were considered evil. I'm not saying I believe that, and that we should believe that, but etymologically, where the words got associated, just like in word in English, the word right means the direction and correct. In most other Indo-European languages, the same thing happens. So gauche just means bad in this case. So we have these four different forms. Let me put a degree symbol along with this as well, because if I define the one where the groups are on top of each other as 0 degrees dihedral angle, then every time I rotate, it is by 60 degrees. So I'll get up through 180. If I keep on rotating, since the molecule is perfectly symmetric, then when you get to 240, it's the same as 120. When you get to 300, it's the same as 60. So often what I'll do is only write half of the diagram. And I'll show what happens as we go energetically from 0 to 60 to 120 to 180. This is dihedral angle, and this is energy. Eclipse is going to be higher than staggered, but the gauche form is going to be higher than the anti form. So the energy curve will look like this. Gauche is like a local minimum. The syn, again, that's when they're right, the two main groups are right on top of each other, most steric hindrance. The anti, furthest from each other, least steric hindrance. To at least take it easy in one small way, I'll let you not have to memorize the energy differences between these forms. But I'll say it one more time, that the question on your exam, everything except maybe the definition, well, maybe even then, everything that's on this page, you need to be able to write down. That means if you don't practice drawing these at least once before the exam, then when you get to the exam and say, oh, that made sense, and then you have to draw it, and you think, wait, which is front and back? Wait, what is staggered and eclipse? Wait, how do I show this correctly? Then instead of taking the 5 or 10 minutes that it should, it'll take you 20 minutes, which means you won't finish the test. So this is my strong encouragement for you to practice drawing line structures, drawing rotated line structures, and drawing Newman projections. We're totally out of time, so section 2, I'll meet you in lab. I do have office hours today. Which, by the way, I have shifted those to 2, I forget now. I think I had them at 2:15, they're at 2:25, so that I officially have a chance to go pick up lunch now. Just wanted to make sure that. Pre-lab, so pre-lab for the next experiment. The only part of the pre-lab that you need to do is one paragraph. So if you read over the procedure, we are not actually doing the exact same experiment. So the only part of it we care about, if you have the new version of the textbook,
It's on page... ...185, preparing and developing a plate. So again, for lab two, the only pre-lab you need to do is the one paragraph on page 185 that says preparing and developing a plate. I'll make sure to make that note on the website. Which, last comment, yes, on your website it says Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, but I've had the correct lecture dates posted there. So don't go to section three. It is the correct things, and I will change it to say Monday, Wednesday, Friday.